starting in the back, moving forward. Great.
I was reading this morning in Matthew 24, mm-hmm. where we're talking about the Lord returning
yeah.
with power and glory.
Yes.
And then in John 17, where he's praying to his Father
yeah.
to show his glory.
Yeah.
And also in that chapter 17, he asked the Lord to let us see him.
Yeah.
In his glory. And
yeah.
I was just wondering, would you discuss glory, the glory of the Lord? And
sure.
Maybe those chapters.
Jesus was praying, Father, restore unto me the glory that I had with you. So, having stepped from that place in the heavenlies where he dwelt, and to put on flesh, of necessity removed that glory of God. Because we couldn't have seen it and dealt with him. Paul saw him in that brightness. John on the Isle of Patmos saw him. These people that saw him in this glory, I mean, John laid like a dead man. So, Jesus having that glory on him while he walked the earth, it would have been a real confrontation against anything that was in the flesh, any sin that was in the flesh. And what he wanted to do was show us that God was love, because him dying on the cross was going to give us access to a full fellowship with him. But meeting us before that transforming power wouldn't have done us well. John laid on Jesus. John saw himself as a selected friend of Jesus. And yet when he saw him in that glory, it consumed him. And so, and yet he should have been, you would think of all the people on earth, John on the Isle of Patmos should have been about ready to see him in his glory. But the thing is, that's how different that glory of God is in its brightness and its purity. Now, we are not, as we grow up as sons of God, the Bible said, beloved, now are we the sons of God. It doth not yet appear what we shall be. But when we see him, I guarantee you, when we see him as he is, it's going to get out of us. There's no pretense. There's no pretending. There's no hiding of anything deep. It's just he looks absolutely through us. And what we want is to get everything out of the way that would hinder a right relationship with him. And so that would bring us into that fullness. And it would also see him as the sufficiency to do that, because you're looking at the potter. You're not just looking at this glory of God, but you're looking at the hands-on workman that's going to do the workmanship in us. And you guys, you couldn't see that glory of Jesus Christ and think that his workmanship would be what the church is today. That isn't what he's working. We have let the flesh dictate what we're doing, and we've become a fleshly church. The first vision that God gave me when I was 12 or 13 years old was it was like fleshly elephants. They looked like elephants. They were just that fleshly. And men were sitting on the top of them and riding them and trying to steer them right and left. And the flesh just rolled. It was so loose on these beasts that it just rolled. And so the message never got to the brain. And that's the way the flesh is. The flesh, when the flesh is in control, God don't get a message through to the brain. And that's what we want to get back to. We want to get to the place where we lose that fleshliness and come up in that place in Christ Jesus. So he's wanting that glory seen. And that's why in Matthew 24, he talks about false prophets and being persecuted and delivered up and afflicted and the reverse happening to you. You think that because you're drawn near to God that everything's going to get easier and better and easier and better and easier and better. And you're just climbing the steps to glory up Jacob's ladder. And the way he's talking, there's going to be all kinds of persecution. People are going to hate you because you believe in him, follow him. And but in verse 13 he says, but he that endureth to the very end, the same shall be saved. And so that's the thing, is enduring to the end. That's what we want to do. We want to make it to the end. And we need him to get there. As much bravado as we may have at any given moment, we need Jesus Christ in us to lead us and guide us into that place. We're not going to get there because we have some memorized Christian creed. We're going to get there because we bow our knee and surrender to the sovereignty of a God who knows how to get us there if we'll listen. And if we'll rest in Him, if we'll trust Him, if we'll obey Him. He said obedience is better than sacrifice. It's way easier to try to offer God sacrifice than it is obedience. Because people come up with all kinds of ways to be obedient, and He wants us to do specific things to be obedient. So, great question. What question was that? Oh, that was your question, Augusta. Thank you. Was there a biblical answer in that? Or was I just talking? Absolutely, Father, make them one. So this is he prayed it, and He told us to pray it. You guys, this isn't something that He left the church a message and said, come on, rise up into perfection. Matthew 5:48, after He has brought us to a place of absolute nakedness concerning our ability to fully serve Him, Matthew 5:48, He said, be therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. And you guys, it's Matthew 26, the things that we think would make the church not perfect, we would include the stuff in Matthew 26. He separates the sheep from the goats. That's people in the church. You know, the goats are the part of the church. This isn't the world from the church. This is the church from the church. He brings the sheep and the goats in, and He separates the sheep and the goats because He said, I was hungry, you knew that, never fed me. And the goats said, when were you hungry? They knew Him. They said, we'd have fed you. We would have gladly fed you. We didn't like those spongy relatives that come and live off of us every summer. But I didn't mean us. I meant... So what He got to in those places, you guys, was things about, I was hungry and you never fed me. I was naked, you never clothed me. The world is naked because the Bible talked about the church in Laodicea being naked because it tried to clothe itself with doctrines. That's what Adam and Eve tried in the garden. We shouldn't misunderstand nakedness. Of all the things we shouldn't misunderstand. So I was naked and you never clothed me. When people are caught in sin, you guys, and people run around talking about it, you don't clothe them, you leave them naked. You like to talk about their nakedness. It's just way more fun to talk about their nakedness than it is to cover them. And you guys, what happens is the church loves to have people get caught in some sort of trouble so they can run around and talk about it. It's like, hey, I was naked, He said. And you never covered me. They said, well, when did we ever see you naked? Didn't cover you. He said, you didn't do this to the least of these. You didn't do it to me. You guys, we think that it's okay to run around talking our stuff. And what happens is you're going to stand before God. We're all going to stand before God. And the thing that He's counting on is for you and me to have covered somebody. If they are naked and somebody starts talking to you about them, it's like, you know what? Actually, what I have decided to do is, even as we're speaking here, is to cover them. Give me just a second. God, cover them with your precious atoning blood. Cover them with the linen of your righteousness. God, just separate them from this nakedness. Bring them into victory. The Bible said, those of you that are spiritual, if you see a brother overtaken in a fault, overtaken, He said. The church doesn't do this. Well, when the church sees somebody overtaken with a fault, we love to talk about that fault. It's like, you know, they got a fault. I like to talk about that fault. I feel so much better when I talk about your faults. But what you're doing is leaving them naked or making them naked. Jesus said, I was naked. You never clothed me. You never covered me. You guys, Matthew 26 nails the difference between what God means about perfection. And it isn't about drinking alcohol. It isn't about that stuff. You give me a believer that has Jesus Christ living inside of them. And if they are drinking and they're starting to drink in excess, the Spirit of God will tell them, enough's enough. That's enough. You're causing yourself trouble. You stop now. You think God will tell you stop? God will tell you stop. This is a God who gets inside of us, you guys. And He can tell you stop. He can tell you stop on the telephone. It's like, you know, you spend too much time on the telephone. Yeah. You guys, God can talk to us about stuff. It's like, hey, you've had enough ice cream. 2 gallons is enough. Like, go easy. I know, I'm walking that narrow line. I just got 4 gallons of Belfonte ice cream in my freezer. I sent Rachel out on a midnight run. She's going to go at midnight. I said, I'm not sending you out alone at midnight on roads like this. I said, how soon could you be back? Amber said, I'll go with her. Wow. Wow. So, but don't you have to say no on stuff? Yes, you do have to say no on stuff, you guys. Here's the deal. Here's the deal. The church missed the point about what it is that God was really after. Because remember the rich man and Lazarus? The rich man lived in plenty, and here's this guy had lived outside his house. And this is what the man knew. The rich man knew that dogs licked his sores. You know what the Good Samaritan did? You know what the Good Samaritan did? He came across somebody in the wilds, beaten to death, nearly to death. And you guys, when you see somebody that's been beaten nearly to death, it is a grisly thing to pick up a human being that's bleeding like that. I'm just telling you. It's one thing to talk about, yep, he's all beat up, beat to death, nearly dead. It's one thing to pour in the oil and the wine. It's another to think about what's going on in a human being's life. That they're asking you, am I going to die? Am I going to die? And you guys, you don't want to touch people. Sometimes you just don't want to touch somebody that's hurt real bad like that. And I can tell you that Leonard was a medic, a decorated soldier. He's going to hate me for saying this. But he was there when people were hurt because he could get to where they were at. And that was the thing. Is if somebody's hurt, that's where I am. That's where I'm going to be. And so, you guys, that's what the church ought to be. We ought to be combat ready, and we ought to be aware that when somebody starts crying, help me, that no matter how many bullets are flying, they're asking you for your help. And you guys, that's what the church ought to be. It ought to be that. That's how far we've missed perfection. That's how far we've missed it. You guys, we think it's about looking great. We think it's about strutting around as a Christian and quoting scriptures and this power of prayer and this halo thing that goes with your head. That is not perfection. That is not perfection. Perfection is having nobody recognize who you are. And you're able to do what God would do and disappear before anybody wants to know who you are. Because who you are doesn't matter. It's who He is that matters. And then protecting each other and loving each other. The rich man knew that this man was licked by the dogs and he wouldn't touch him because he was too dirty to touch. And you guys, that's exactly what we have to do. It's what we have to do. It's what God demands of us. He doesn't demand less than that. That little girl down in Honduras that had a cleft palate, born with she was Downs. And she was born with a heart defect, a hole in her heart. And this guy that we knew had the dad working for him for starvation wages. And I went out one day with this guy that his brother was a Christian friend of mine. And we went out to this guy's house, and he was building a house, and here's this wooden barn, and in the wooden barn was this little girl that could hardly breathe. And she had, at that time, that bad flu was going around, and she had it so bad, I actually didn't think we'd get her to town alive. I just began to pray. I told the dad, we're going to take your little girl to San Pedro Sula. Yeah, she just laid limp. When you picked her up, she just laid absolutely limp. Her mind was concentrating on breathing. We went to a specialist. He took me in and showed me the sonogram of this little baby's heart, and there was a hole in it. He pushed on the chest and lifted that muscle up, and there was a hole the size of your thumb in that heart. He said, when I do this, watch. And he said, that's a hole in her heart, and he let it go. He said, the only thing that's keeping her alive is that it's covered up by this tissue, and it holds it in place. And he said, that's when you lift it up, she actually began to bleed into her chest cavity. So you guys, we brought those people home to live in our house, to live there in La Ceiba. And you guys, they weren't easy people to have around, and we did everything that we could to get that baby into surgery, to get something done with that baby surgery. And you guys, that's what the church is about. It isn't about just preaching messages. It's not talking to pastors about seminars. It's about finding somebody in a barn and realizing, I can't leave you. I can't leave you in this barn. And they gave her medicine, dealt with the congestion in her chest. We drove, of course, 3 hours to San Pedro Sula. And I just kept praying. I didn't believe she'd live all the way. They gave her medicine. We prayed for that baby. And you guys, within 4 or 5 days, once she was clean and living in our house, she was living with animals. And the animal dust was killing her lungs besides. And so, you guys, it was amazing the difference in her world because our yard was clean. It's covered with grass. We don't have all the animal dust and the animals around. And she bathed in the troughs where the animals drank. And you guys, here's the thing. Christians told me about her. You understand that? Christians told me about this little girl dying in the barn. How would that happen? How could you be a believer and know a baby is dying in a barn and tell some other Christian that this guy's got a little girl and she's dying? It's like, and what? So that's what God's telling me and you. And this is where we're living. We're living on this edge where God's bringing the church back to understanding what it is that He wants from us. So perfection isn't that you can put on the finest suit, drive up in a limo, have bodyguards to protect Christian preachers. There are bodyguards that protect Christian preachers. And when they travel to foreign countries, they have more bodyguards. Listen to me. If God isn't big enough to protect you, then maybe it's time to go home. If God ain't big enough to protect you, what do you need armed bodyguards for when you're a preacher of the gospel? You guys, I don't get it. But that is not perfection. A $3,000 suit and a limo arrival and the bright light shining on your name in the marquee, that is not perfection. That doesn't constitute perfection. It is finding God inside of a child in a barn and recognizing it's God. Anthony Campolo said that he was on the island of Haiti and this woman came running up to him. They were getting ready to get in this little airplane. They were going to fly back to Port-au-Prince. And this woman said, Mister, take my baby. He said, I can't take your baby. I can't take your baby. She said, take my baby. If I keep my baby, it'll die. You take my baby and it won't die. He said he got into the airplane. And he said he told the pilot, go. And they start down this grass strip. And he said he looks out the window and running beside this plane. Is this woman with this baby. And he said, I was halfway back to Port-au-Prince before it dawned on me who the baby was. He said, I love Jesus. I love Jesus in that field. If I'd have known it was Jesus... Pretending is buying books and reading up on stuff. Pretending is going to every kind of seminar to find out what to do to serve God. That's pretending. You have a potter. You have a potter. And if you're the clay, He'll soften it. And when He softens it, He'll mold it. And if you'll let Him do it, He will open up every avenue of success in your life. He didn't birth you for failure. He birthed you for success. He wants you to succeed at everything you do in life. But He wants you to let Him change the way. The way you think. Because you'll be half the way to Port-au-Prince before it dawns on you. You left God in the field. And you and I can't afford to miss God on these issues. And you guys, that's what God wants from us. He wants us to be what He wants us to do, and it's to be like Him, to spend ourselves for the people around us. And that's what God is doing in the church. He's doing it in you. He's doing it in me. And we're studying these things in the Bible not to plumb the depths so that we are more endowed with knowledge than people around us, but it's because we're jealous for the truth, because God deserves better than to have people say anything they want about His Bible. And there have to be some people on the earth that say, the teacher will teach me, the Holy Ghost will teach me. He gave us the Spirit of truth for a reason. And if He gave us the Spirit of truth and I ask Him to teach me, He will teach me. And if I care enough about it, that's what I'll do, is have Him tell me these things. And that's what He'll do for you. And that's what the Spirit of God has planned for us, is to see His glory and to see it in each other. That's why I like that chorus, what I see in you is the glory of our God. And I love you with the love of the Lord. What I see in you is the glory of God. You guys, when we begin to see it in each other, where we esteem one another that way, that's why those people that were goats said, if I'd have seen you hungry, I would have most certainly fed you. I would have most certainly, wrong motive. Feeding Him because He's God and for your benefit, wrong idea. Giving tithes because He's going to give you tenfold, wrong idea. Wrong idea. There are men building kingdoms on that idea. Seed faith, seed money. You plant your money in me and see what it gets you. Get me rich. And what it'll get you is wiser, I hope. I hope. Because the thing is, you guys, giving really to God isn't about wanting something back. It's about giving to God, because He gave it to us. So, that's what you and I want. We want that kind of walk with God. And we want Him to mold us. And when it doesn't feel comfortable about the molding, that's okay. Because we know He has a purpose in the molding. And we know that love does that. You guys, love just has something in it that connects us so tight with the person we love, they could lead us down any kind of road. And it will not change the love. We'll just chase on doing what love does until all these things are done right. And you guys, that's the way God wants us to be. And this fickle love we have that says, bless me and I'm okay, that's what the devil told God about Job. He said it's fickle love. Men love you with fickle love. God said, not him. The devil said, sure, him. Him. I got bad news for you. Your friend Job only loves you because you're a sugar daddy. He only loves you because you give him stuff, because you take care of him. He's got a hedge around him. That's why he loves you. That's what's wrong with the relationship you have. You're expecting people on earth to love you with a real love, God, and they ain't happening. God said, all right, you can deal with him. Don't touch him. And man, immediately, the devil couldn't wait to destroy everything he had physically. Job just loved God. It's like, well, you know, I received good from God. Why couldn't I receive evil from God? Huh? I came into the world naked. I'm going out naked. Blessed be the name of the Lord. It's like, well, how do you mess with somebody that talks like that? This man's got the wrong kind of... I mean, how do you mess with him? Then the devil said, well, sure, because of his flesh, you don't let me touch his flesh. The devil said, if you let me touch his flesh, he'd curse you. God said, it ain't happening. Sorry. But this guy loves me for me. He didn't love me because I'm doing this stuff. He don't love me because I protect him. He doesn't love me because he's well. He would love me if he is sick. If he had to cough and cough and cough to say, I love you, he'd still whisper with a raspy voice in the midst of the ashes. He would scrape sores off his body in the ashes and praise me. The devil said, I don't see it. But he did. The devil did see it. And heaven saw it. And God saw it. And that's what he wants in you. He wants you to be so faithful that nothing changes you from faithful. Good or tough or high mountains or low valleys. None of that stuff ought to matter. You guys, because there's a love in the running. There's a love in the offing. There's a sense of connection that nothing can change. And that's what God's doing in our lives. So, It's a good question. God's got answers for those things, you guys, that separate us from this stuff.